Have you ever stood before a painting, feeling its colors and textures weave a captivating tale? Art, in its multifaceted essence, has the remarkable ability to capture history, conveying emotions and narratives that words often struggle to express. As you encounter works of art, take a moment to delve deeper, unraveling the hidden stories within them. You might be surprised by the fascinating discoveries that await. A remarkable mural painting can be found in the Alhambra Palace in Granada, Spain, within this magnificent structure that acts as a gateway to the rich cultural and historical legacy of the Nasrid dynasty. To fully appreciate this artwork, we must first embark on a journey through time, understanding the complex political landscape that shaped its creation. Following the fragmentation of the Almohad Empire in the aftermath of the Battle of Las Navas de Tolosa, Muhammad ibn Yusuf ibn Nasr, the founder of the Nasrid dynasty, rose to prominence. Establishing his reign in Granada in 1237, he navigated a complex web of alliances and conflicts, forming a vassal state under the Castilian crown. While the Nasrid kingdom encompassed territories from Tarifa to Almeria, its borders remained fluid, subject to the shifting tides of power. Meanwhile, in North Africa, the Marinid dynasty ascended in the mid-13th century, conquering key cities like Marrakesh and Fez. Despite repeated attempts to expand into Spain, their ambitions were thwarted at the decisive Battle of Salado at 1340. Despite the backdrop of political tension, Spain witnessed a period of flourishing trade between Christian and Muslim communities. This exchange, facilitated by merchants from across Europe, notably Catalans, Florentines, Genoese, and Venetians, fostered cultural exchange and economic prosperity. Notably, under the reign of Muhammad V, a close relationship developed between the Nasrid kingdom and King Pedro I of Castile. This period also saw an influx of Muslim immigrants seeking refuge from Christian conquests, further enriching the cultural mosaic of Granada. The Nasrid Kingdom of Granada will stand out for the refinement of its court and the great artistic legacy that has come down to us. It cannot be a mere coincidence that the founder of the dynasty, Al-Nasr, came from the Kingdom of Murcia, which had reached a high level of acculturation, partly due to Christian exchanges. The kingdom reached its peak under the reigns of Yusuf III, 1333-54, and Muhammad V, 1354-59, exiled in Fez, 1362-1390, his son. This was a time of economic and commercial expansion, and as a result, of artistic brilliance, which gave the Kingdom of Granada a well-deserved reputation. During the late 14th century, the Castilian and Nasrid courts in Spain shared striking parallels. Both kings faced internal struggles with their illegitimate brothers, and dynastic assassinations unfolded. These conflicts ultimately led to the demise of the Nasrid dynasty in Castile. Interestingly, despite these internal discords, there were also instances of close relationships between the kings. For example, King Pedro I of Castile reportedly killed the usurper Muhammad VI himself in Tablada, and even loaned his successor, Muhammad V, 3,000 dinars to help him establish his reign. Muhammad returned to Granada in 1362 after having spent some time as a refugee, first in Seville and then at the Marinid Abu Salam's court in Fez. Almost as soon as he was reinstated on the throne, the Nasrid monarch Muhammad converted the Alhambra, Granada's hilltop fortress, into a luxurious palace. The elaborate and sophisticated nature of its decoration attests to the richness of the court culture of this last Islamic dynasty to rule on Spanish soil. Geometrical designs and inscriptions abound in each of the palace's rooms as reminders of the scientific and lyric preoccupations of these 14th century Hispanic Arabs. He undertook both renovations and the construction of a magnificent new palace at the Alhambra. He began with a new mexuar, hall or salon, where official dynastic business was conducted, which was linked to the old mosque, and also carried out important renovations in the so-called Hall of the Boat, Sala de la Barca, and the northern gallery at the palace of Comares, Qasr al-Sultan, the center of court life. According to Spanish historian and archaeologist Fernandez Puertas, construction took place between 1362 and 1370. During this same period of time, Muhammad also founded the Maristan Hospital, 1365-1367, as waqf, a property or institution endowed in perpetuity and subject to certain conditions imposed by the patron or founder. The reign of Sultan Muhammad V of Granada, in his first ruling period between 1354 and 1359, and for the second one, which was between 1362 and 1391, presents a fascinating case study in courtly intrigues, artistic expression, and the delicate dance between trust and betrayal. This period is furthered by the complex relationship between the Sultan, his trusted advisor and poet, Lisan ad-Din Aybiyen al-Khatib, and the ambitious newcomer, Ibn Zamrak. The narrative explores the intricate dynamics between Sultan Muhammad V of Granada and his trusted minister and poet, Lis an ad-Din Ibn al-Khatib. Ibn al-Khatib, who was not only a political advisor but also a poet, had the honor of his verses being inscribed on the walls of the Alhambra, symbolizing his influence and prestige in the court. However, the arrival of another gifted poet, Ibn Zamrak, marked a significant shift in the court's dynamics. Ibn Zamrak proposed a hedonistic concept for the Palace of the Lions, Palacio de los Leones, which was in stark contrast to Ibn al-Khatib's more orthodox sensibilities. As Ibn Zamrak's popularity grew, fueled by his poetry, he began to eclipse Ibn al-Khatib's influence in the court. This shift in favor was symbolically represented by Ibn Zamrak's poems replacing those of Ibn al-Khatib on the Alhambra walls. This narrative provides a fascinating insight into the power dynamics and cultural shifts within the court of Sultan Muhammad V, illustrating how art and literature were intertwined with politics and influence. It also highlights the transient nature of power and prestige. Mural painting of Hall of the Kings, Alhambra, Granada. The story tells of the Lord of Muslim Seville, who gave a party to show off and celebrate the premiere of a leather dome with which he decorated his house. Owning a ceiling covered with decorated leather could therefore be a social event, but also an extraordinary luxury and an exponent of the sensitivity and good taste of the owner, as seems to be deduced from the ponderations of the poets who attended the party, in which everyone drank in honor of such a precious work. That is why the owner of the house, who between the praises and the wine must have lost his head, gave the leather dome to the poet who seemed to have shown so much subtlety in the description of the work and such a successful praise of it, that he made him the only one worthy of owning it. After the intoxication of the praises and the wine, he had to pay the poet much more than it cost him to recover the dome. Since the 18th century, when news of the Alhambra began to spread and its visitors increased, these examples of wooden and leather ceilings covering the chambers of the Hall of the Kings in the Alhambra's Palace of the Lions have attracted attention for their artistic interest, and above all, because the presence of naturalistic figures in the decoration of a Muslim palace was then considered strange. They also aroused curiosity about the date they might have been painted and who painted them, which raised difficulties in classifying them within Spanish art of the late Middle Ages. Finally, it was intriguing to know if the nightly scenes in the extreme chambers and that of the Muslim characters in the central chamber were composed as simple decorative themes without narrative intention, or on the contrary, narrated real or novelistic events. To truly understand the paintings in the Hall of the Kings, we must analyze them within their historical and architectural context. They are positioned strategically in the Palace of the Lions, also known as the Palace of the Happy Garden, Qasr al-Riyad, in the Diwan of Vizier Ibn Zamrak, a place intentionally chosen for its significance within the complex. The Palace of the Lions, built entirely in the same period, is in reality a very complicated set in which the whole and the parts are related to each other in an unusual way. As an ideological unit, we must consider that the entire Palace of the Lions was erected by Muhammad V with a very specific objective, his own exaltation, the demonstration of his power, his genealogy and his legitimacy as a means of propaganda and representation of the Nasrid dynasty. During the reign of Sultan Muhammad V of Alhambra and the unique cultural exchange fostered between the Islamic and Christian worlds, this was largely because of the diplomatic relations established with the Castilian King Pedro I, known as the Cruel. This peaceful coexistence allowed for an unprecedented exchange in art production. Christian artists, believed to be of Italian or Spanish origin, were granted permission to work in the Sultan's court. Their most notable contribution can be seen in the mural paintings of the Hall of Kings, Sala de los Reyes. These works introduced new artistic styles and techniques to the Islamic world, marking a significant period in art history during Sultan Muhammad V's reign. For instance, the work of Nasrid artists in the Alcazar of Pedro I in Seville exemplifies the expansion and admiration of Hispano-Muslim artistic production in Andalusia, Al-Andalus. This led to their being called upon to decorate palaces or rooms in Christian areas across the Iberian Peninsula. In the opposite direction, and increasingly, we find testimonies from outside the Nasrid Sultanate that are present in the Alhambra, sometimes as testimonies of objects brought from other Muslim countries and also from Christian territories. As an example, the following two works are a testimony of how the painter-artists, in this case, influenced in the Sultanate by the Gothic fashion in the Alhambra, are required to work in the court of Muhammad V, leaving their style and artistic origin plasticized, which allows their presence to be evidenced at the same time that it shows us how art has no borders and spreads and influences any space that is admired. In the Alhambra, there are notable examples of these works, such as in the work of the Christian painter who came from the court of Juan Fuffer Trastámara, who worked on the decoration of the three vaults of the Hall of Kings in the Riyadh Palace, dated to the early 1380s. In a spectacular way, another work, a Sienese painting table, represents the fight of two warriors, in which a border with the Nasrid dynastic motto appears in Gothic letters. This work shows us a decoration very different from the one we have today, since in the Palatine rooms, together with the Nasrid plasterwork and fabrics, there were paintings that decorated the rooms of the palaces. The contemplation of these decorated ceilings brings to mind the consideration of Ibn Jaldun after his visit to Spain, when he said, "A people neighboring another, which considerably surpasses it, cannot but copy it and imitate it to a great extent. This happens today between the Andalusians due to their relations with the Galicians, being remarkable how much they resemble them in their clothes and attire, uses and customs, even to the point of putting images and simulacra on the walls of their houses, in their buildings and rooms. Whoever observes this with eyes of wisdom will not be able to do less than esteem it as an indication of foreign superiority and predominance. But the empire belongs to God." The mural paintings are located on the ceiling of the Hall of the Kings, Salón de los Reyes, also known as the Hall of Justice, Sala de la Justicia. Within the Alhambra Palace complex, not only can they be considered the most significant Nasrid paintings, speaking from a qualitative point of view, but they are also the ones that have aroused the most interest among specialists, with very different proposals about their realization, origin, and interpretation. The three mural paintings located in the three vaults of the Hall of the Kings, they are the unique representations representing courtly scenes from the life of the Nasrid dynasty. Two very different types of themes are developed in the three domes. The main painting of the Kuba dome located in the central shrine, which is in direct line with the Fountain of the Lions and also gives its name to the room, represents some notable characters. It seems to be the first 10 kings of the Nasrid dynasty, from Alhamar to Muhammad V. They are 10 notable bearded characters sitting on cushions, and they communicate with each other with evident gestures of conversation, all no doubt conventional, since it is not possible for those who have reigned in different years and have not been able to coincide as kings to meet and converse at the same time. The cushions are painted red on a white background and rest on a narrow, low mattress. This extends along the floor next to the wall and used to be covered by a fabric with a striped design of different colors on a dark background. The different kings carry 10 swords and 2 shields can also be seen. On them there are 2 mascots. The clothes they wear are green, red, orange, white, and black, with the use of gold in the weapons. The characters lack royal attributes. The paintings of the other 2 shrines reflect the artistic relationships between Muslims and Christians. These are chivalrous episodes in which Moors and Christians intervene. In the North Shrine, 2 characters, a Christian and a Muslim, perform a series of similar activities with the aim of winning the love of a Christian lady. The 2 lateral vaults are ornamented with numerous narratives of a gallant court. Various characters speak, fight, or hunt in a landscape formed by trees, fountains, castles, and populated with animals and plants. Despite the difference in themes, a series of stylistic features unite them. An incipient chiaroscuro suggests the volumes in folds and hair. A tentative perspective, cavalier, makes us see the different planes of the architectures, accentuated by different tones. In the figures, the different size marks the distances or the importance of the characters. A black line outlines the figures. The landscape introduces us to the narrative, contextualizing it with the ground line and with trees more suggested than painted, as in illuminated miniatures. The buildings painted are characteristic of Christian lands. The castles resemble Italian ones and do not follow Andalusian models, as was the case in the miniatures of Riyadh and Bayad. There is a perfect coordination of colors. With few variations, they achieve a perfect balance. The backgrounds of the lateral vaults are dark blue, as if everything were taking place at night. In the central one, it is golden, neutral, abstract, transcendent. The compositions are governed by the principle of symmetry. This is evident in their overall layout, with similar themes on the lateral vaults, and in the interior of each of the vaults. In the central one, the 10 characters are distributed with equal importance with respect to the total space of the ellipse, showing that they all enjoy the same category, 3 on each major side of the ellipse, 2 at each end. Through the expression of their hands and their attitudes, they close the composition, each one relating to the character next to them, and each one being able to be framed in a triangle. It is interesting to comment on the garments, generally luxurious, that appear in the paintings. The central characters are dressed in colored cloths, the usual in Granada in the 14th century, according to Al-Jatib, among which white prevails, highlighted and complemented by red and blue. They wear different types of garments. 4 of them wear the garnacha, a loose Christian garment through which the arms were pulled out, sometimes with a small hood, and which was fastened with 2 tabs at the neckline. Under it, or the cloak worn by the others, Muslim tunics can be seen. In the lateral vaults, there are Muslim and Christian knights. The former are dressed in a similar way to that described, under the tunic of the Moorish horseman who hunts. The deer wears the sarawil, linen breeches. The only ladies are the Christian ones. Thus, there is no Muslim woman who covered herself with the malafa, a kind of white linen, cotton or silk cloth that covered the head and face so that only the eyes appeared. However, the ladies in these paintings have their nails painted red in the Muslim manner, although their dresses, like those of the Christian characters, correspond to the period in Western Europe. It is also necessary for me to describe the existence of a multitude of animals: hares, rabbits, foxes, dogs, horses, deer, bears, lions, wild boars, even monkeys, birds of both coral, rooster, dove, and prey, goshawk or falcon, famous for those raised in Nibla, as well as aquatic heron, crane, and others, vulture, magpie, turtle dove, goldfinch, etc. Precious stones were numerous in high-ranking Muslim families, but here the male characters only wear the hilts of their swords as personal adornment. The maidens in the side vaults do wear necklaces, earrings, and hair ornaments. Their cloaks are of ermine. The horses are richly harnessed, some with a saddle and spurs, and therefore the knight who rides it rides with his legs stretched out, and others without, in the Muslim style, being ridden side saddle. Among the weapons they carry, swords and lances, bows and crossbows, the rich hilts of the ceremonial swords of the central characters, and a daraka shield, made of leather, kidney-shaped, which solar dates from the 13th century, since it appears in Las Cantigas, which is carried by the Muslim horsemen. And for the representation of space, we find that perspective is present in the drawing of the constellations, while the ground on which the horses are placed does not follow any perspective. This detail reminds us of Persian miniatures, which are characterized by the absence of perspective, and the harmony of the human elements with the rest of the design. Also, in contrast to the perspectives of the landscapes of contemporary Florentine painting, in these paintings of the Alhambra, everything is presented as close-ups and nothing or almost nothing beyond. Finally, the three murals share an oval rectangular shape in which the color of the stars and their backgrounds differ from one drawing to another. If we look at the painting of the central shrine, we see how the stars are green on gold, but the stars of the other two murals are painted gold on an orange background. Numerous scholars debate the classification of paintings created by Christian artists in the Islamic world. Are they Islamic or Christian? To define the use of the term Islamic, I turn to Oleg Grabar, who emphasizes its use in art. Islamic does not refer to the art of a specific religion, he explains. Many monuments have little to do with Islam. Artworks made by and for non-Muslims can be Islamic art. Jewish communities within the Muslim world produce Jewish Islamic art. The complex development of Coptic art in Egypt from the 7th century are examples of Christian Islamic art. Even later Indian art, with its complexities, can be considered Islamic art. Importantly, Islamic in Islamic art differs from Christian in Christian art or Buddhist in Buddhist art. In other words, Grabar argues that Islamic art should not be limited to religious art, but instead encompass all art from the Islamic world, regardless of religious or cultural affiliation. For the case of Sala de los Reyes, it was persuaded that these ceilings were built and painted by Muslims, although it was considered difficult to convince, especially because of the widespread belief in the Quranic prohibition of representing living figures, which, on the other hand, was so constantly violated throughout the Muslim world. The justifications for this opinion are the information provided about the technique of construction and painted decoration to better justify the Muslim nature of these ceilings. It is worth highlighting the technical superiority and different style of Christian paintings that were immediate or contemporary to those of the Alhambra, especially noticeable in those with similar themes. For example, the riders and horses that seem to be made of wood and that, in truth, have more expression in Christian paintings, or the notable difference in the way of folding the clothes, in the hair and in the hands, of the stiffness and rigidity of the limbs that is noticeable in the figures of these vaults, where nothing more is seen as an expressive or modeling resource than the black silhouette that forms the drawing and the various colors that fill the spaces. Note that the Alhambra paintings are not dissolved with linseed oil as the Christian paintings already were, but are made of glue or egg, varnished afterwards with linseed oil like those still used in Russian churches. Also, the observations on the construction of the roofs appreciated that they are made of wood of the kind that is vulgarly called pear tree, de peralejo, in the 7-centimeter thick boards, not cut into trusses or regular shells, but but worked in pieces of various sizes to form the ellipsoid, whose arrangement and materials are indicating that they were made in Granada precisely. The nails that join the boards are those that the Arabs made for the whole building, dipped in tin so that the oxidation of the iron would not damage the paintings. On the concave surface of the boards, well smoothed, is stretched the leather that they must have wetted to mold it, glued with a thick glue of glue, and nailed in all directions with small, square-headed nails in the shape of a crutch. On the aforementioned litter there is spread a layer of matte plaster and glue 2 millimeters thick, which has been polished and painted red like bole to draw the painted objects on top with an awl, taking into account beforehand that in the backgrounds that were to be gilded in low relief, the layer of plaster is thicker to produce the decorations with molds and a slight pressure, and it have been noticed in some features of the awls on the hard plaster traces of other strokes without order, among which there were forms of Arabic letters placed there as signs of the craftsman who was responsible for tracing them, new indication in favor of the Moorish origin. We also have the opinion of Spanish scholar Manuel Gomez Moreno. He believed them to be from the last third of the 14th century, made by a Christian painter of the Florentine school. Regarding the central vault, he considers it inexplicable for the painter to be Moorish. The slovenliness and inaccuracy of doubtful Arab character, the background against which the figures stand out, is gilded with non-Arabic relief decorations. At the ends of the divan are coats of arms of Castilian form, held by lions, with the sash raised, just as San Fernando gave it to Ben Alhamer as an enterprise, without the constant modification of suppressing the heads of snakes and adding the known motto, proof that the artist neither followed custom nor knew Arabic writing. Finally, he is inclined to believe that the figures represented are those of the kings of Granada. He makes a meticulous description of the side vaults, highlighting what in costumes or constructions is attributable to the Gothic art of the 14th century, and more specifically to Italian fashions of that time, barely mentioning what is attributable to Muslims, or at least to the Mudéjar atmosphere in which the paintings were produced. In refuting the opinion that they could have been painted by Starnina, he points out archaisms that he considers only as testimonies of the diminished artistic value they possess, and that technically place them no more advanced than the art of Cimabue, a painter of the 13th century, who died at the beginning of the 14th century. Such archaisms are very incorrect drawing for the 19th century, contours marked with black lines, almost entirely unknown, the use of shadows and lack of expression in the faces, archaic elements that stylistically approximate them to the end of the Romanesque. Gomez Moreno supports his thesis on the opinion of Dr. Justi about 6 Christian-themed tables from the end of the 14th century, preserved in the Valencia Museum, which have a great analogy with these paintings. Moreover, in 1946, Lafuente Ferrari, historian of Spanish art, particularly Goya, when classifying Spanish painting from the 14th, 15th centuries, does not include Hispano-Muslim painting and only alluded to the fact that the paintings preserved in some rooms of the Alhambra also demonstrate a close dependence on Italian art, which is not to affirm that they are executed by an Italian painter. His quote has the merit of being the first time these paintings are taken into account in a history of Spanish painting. Gudiol, a Catalan art historian specializing in Catalan Romanesque painting and Gothic art, classifies them as Moorish painting within the linear Gothic style of the Andalusian region of the first Gothic period. He considers it logical to technically include them in this cycle, deciding on the old problem of the affiliation of these paintings, executed on leather, prepared with plaster in 3 elliptical cupolas. They are a work, he says, of great sensitivity and can be considered among the most beautiful that Hispanic art produced. Their kinship with the Cienese has been pointed out, but it is clear that, even taking into account the universality of the linear style during the second half of the 14th century, we cannot in any way relate these Granadian paintings with the brilliant representation that the Italo-Gothic current had in the schools of the Spanish Levant. It is necessary to point out, despite the fact that the examples that have reached us are rare and poorly preserved, a possible union between the linear style of the cupolas of the Alhambra and certain remains of civil decoration wrapped in the Muslim technique. As an example of this, we will mention what remains of the mural decoration of the Cordovan Palace that currently houses the archaeological museum of this city, and the paintings of the so-called Tower of Hercules of the house that was of the Arias Dávila in Segovia. In any case, the calligraphic lyricism and even the technique of the paintings of the Alhambra fit into the artistic trajectory that from the Arab miniature passed to the decoration of the Alcazar of Seville and to that of the palaces of Toledo, and that continued in the polychrome Castilian ceilings. Last but not least, the direct or circumstantial references to these paintings are numerous. The Alhambra, a jewel nestled amidst Granada's embrace, stands as a testament not only to Muhammad V's singular triumph, but also to the intricate dance of power that defined his reign. While its vibrant halls and intricate calligraphy whisper of victory, the underlying narrative speaks of a deeper truth, a constant grappling with envy and the specter of Christian dominance. The Hall of Justice, adorned with Muhammad's image towering over vanquished foes, serves as a powerful visual metaphor. It transcends mere celebration, etching in stone the Sultan's yearning for unparalleled authority, a yearning fueled by the ever-present threat at the Iberian frontier. The inscription, a defiant proclamation of Islamic supremacy, becomes a poignant reminder of the precariousness of power in a region teetering on the precipice of religious conflict. Muhammad's legacy, therefore, is not simply one of architectural brilliance, but of a ruler forever caught in the undertow of historical forces. The Alhambra, while a monument to his singular achievement, becomes a canvas upon which his anxieties and vulnerabilities are laid bare. It is a story not just of victory, but of the ever-present struggle for survival, a struggle that would ultimately define the Nasrid dynasty's fate. The Alhambra is not merely a victory song, but a complex narrative etched in stone. It is a monument to ambition, insecurity, and the ever-present specter of defeat. It serves as a powerful reminder that even in moments of triumph, the shadow of vulnerability looms large, shaping the legacies of rulers and empires alike. It is important to note, however, that Muhammad V's anxieties about his dynasty's survival were not unique. The renowned Muslim historian and philosopher Ibn Khaldun, writing in his book Al-Muqaddima, "In our own time, the Andalusis imitate and assimilate themselves to the Iberian Christian nations in their dress, their emblems and symbols, and in many of their customs and manners. They even go so far as to paint figural representations on their walls and have them in buildings and houses. This should suffice as evidence to the observer of their state of subjugation and domination by Castile." While this observation does not directly reflect Muhammad V's specific situation, it underscores the complex and precarious nature of power in a region marked by religious and political conflict. Standing defiant against time, the Alhambra's opulent halls whisper tales not just of conquest, but of the fragility that underpins even the grandest empires. Though etched with declarations of victory, its very stones bear the weight of insecurity, a silent counterpoint to the soaring triumphalism. The Nasrid dynasty's motto, "Only God is victorious," echoes endlessly through its halls, a stark reminder that even in moments of glory, shadows linger. Beyond mere aesthetics, the intricate calligraphy adorning its walls embodies the enduring power of words, transmitting not only the might of rulers, but the enduring message of faith, a testament to humanity's enduring quest for meaning in the face of impermanence. The Alhambra is a monument not just to ambition, but to the bittersweet reality of human existence, where victory and vulnerability dance in an eternal embrace.
This has been an episode of the Multicultural Middle Ages, an anthology-style podcast series sponsored by the Medieval Academy of America. Season 3 was produced by Will Beatty, Jonathan Correa-Reyes, Reed O'Mara, and Logan Quigley, with music by Anna O'Connell. For more information on the MMA podcast, follow the links in the episode description and consider subscribing to keep up with new episodes.